Hi, this is Mike Chapman of Springboard Strategy Brand. Joining me again today are two members of Springboard Strategy faculty who joined me a couple weeks ago to talk about the benefits and ROI of hiring an outside facilitator for strategy workshops and retreats. Please welcome Ellen Craven of Brand Novus and Jill Karnick of Upsite Consulting.
Hi, Mike. Good to be back.
Hi, Mike. Great to be here. Looking forward to a good conversation.
The goal of today's conversation is to help organizations move from meetings and lists and to-dos to actionable insights that drive implementation and results. On our last insight clip, we talked about the difference between a moderator and a facilitator, the benefits of hiring someone who's a neutral third party, the ways a professional facilitator can help get the most out of every participant, and the ways they can turn strategies into realities. Today, we're going to talk about some real-world examples of how facilitators actually impacted organizational growth. Let's start here. Can you think of times where an organization started with an internal moderator and where that led?
I had a workshop in the past that was particularly successful, actually. And it was with a regional health system that was struggling to meet patient access goals. And what this health system did is they actually had multiple attempts to address gaps with internal facilitated workshops. They continued to see increasing patient wait times. They had service lines that were struggling to gain traction. They also had inconsistent patient experience deliveries. So the leaders really had a deep knowledge of the challenges, but yet the internal workshops repeatedly stalled. And that was really because of several reasons. One is junior leaders really often held back. They didn't want to challenge their senior peers for fear of any kind of backlash that might happen later. So they really kind of held things close to the vest during these workshops. Also, there were silos between the functions that made it hard to make decisions across departments. So having kind of that limited line of sight, especially when you're trying to kind of move action items forward, was very difficult. Also, leaders were reluctant to acknowledge where past decisions had failed, either for political reasons or for risking their reputation potentially. So, but what was most important was the failure to effectively execute on the new strategies after the internal workshops were done. And because the enterprise did not see any improvement to patient access, they in turn turned to a third party facilitator that was actually able to move the needle.
There was an engagement that I was part of that was looking at product development. So this was a very large healthcare company that was developing a new product for sleep. And when I had been brought in, they had already had multiple facilitators across different functions. So similar to Jill, a lot of stuff was happening in silos and was leading down paths where, you know, the insights person was trying to come up with the right insights that were matching what the design function was doing. And marketing was running sessions that may or may not have been impacting or even including the right people at the right time, which was leading to, very similar to what Jill said, not being able to make decisions or getting into where you get into that almost paralysis of, you are so far down the track and have spent so much money and so much time trying to develop this brand new product. And it's almost like you start talking to yourself that this is the right way to go. This is the right way to go. And you keep moving that in that direction when you haven't had that time out to have people actually stop and get together collaboratively and talk and be able to say, wait, are we actually heading in the right direction? Or is there something that's missing or something that's broken at this point?
So when you were brought into a situation like this, did you have to start from scratch? or were you able to use their existing data?
So I would say I don't ever start from scratch. I always start with what is existing data? Where are all parties at? What have they done up until now? And I'll actually build on that last example because when I was brought in, I was brought in as a unifier to really bridge all of the different functions, get them all in the same room, and have them work together across, all of the, like I said, all of the different disciplines and really look at a journey map for the consumer. And that was basically where we started. But that was really about taking everything that they had already had, crafting a session that took that, but also started to pull more information out of the different stakeholders that I knew I wasn't seeing yet, that it was stuff that was being, held in heads, or it wasn't document or data that had been shared with me. So yeah, best practice is you always have to start with what is existing. It doesn't mean that it's still the right data for moving forward, but it is existing data, and it helps to at least understand what's that foundation for where the team is as you're coming in as a facilitator. Jill, what about you? What have you seen?
Yeah, I completely agree. The most that we can start with any kind of historical data, any kind of insights ahead of time, really sets the stage for a good workshop. I recall a particular client that allowed us to conduct an initial deep dive, analyzing their internal performance metrics across different functional areas, which was extremely helpful. But not only that, we were able to conduct one-on-one stakeholder interviews prior to the workshop. So this initial exploratory phase was extremely valuable because it uncovered insights that allowed us to then elevate the workshop design. So by understanding ahead of time, the true pressures that the leaders were under, right? We saw those metrics that were failing, right? We heard the voice of the stakeholder and what their concerns were ahead of time. And then also the decisions that kept on getting stuck, we were able to design the session around real trade-offs, essentially. And not only that, these insights helped us, which is really key, anticipate where the discussions might stall, or where there might be some defensiveness that might arise amongst particular leaders that were participating. So having that initial exploratory phase ahead of time, again, not only helped us, but then in turn helped our client because we could perform a better workshop in the end.
So, Jill, you talked about getting more out of each participant. Can you give me some examples?
Absolutely. There are a few approaches that I've made standard in recent workshops, beginning with a ability to properly set the stage for a workshop. So it's important that we let leadership know that as facilitators, we are neutral partners. We've touched on this before, who are, it's our role really to challenge the thinking during the workshop. We have no internal political investments. We have no stake in defending any past decisions made by the enterprise. And then also, we design an honest platform for discussion. This includes something that it's called normalizing disagreement, basically. We expect for there to be conflicting views, and we let the participants know that. So in doing so, we actually can conduct exercises that elicit structured disagreements. So that kind of takes the pressure off, right? Okay, we now know that I can be disagreeing with somebody else in the room, and that is okay. So what's important here is that by having an intentionally designed environment, it fosters engagement through the sessions, and then it also motivates the leaders to share more openly and honestly. And then something else at the end of the workshops that I've incorporated is something that I like to call Monday Makes It Real. And this is where the facilitation turns from insight to actual execution. So here we're translating newly agreed upon strategy into behavior shifts. So what must people do differently on Monday? We are designing commitments that are specific and that leadership has to make public. So essentially making that accountability and really underscoring that accountability. So this helps stress test decisions against real world limitations. So for example, packed schedules or time commitments or other logistical constraints. So having the expectations that things will be different on Monday really helps to solidify the execution. And then leaders leave the sessions knowing exactly what they need to do differently. Ellen, how about you?
So you hit on a lot of great things. I might want to see some of your secret sauce. I do want to see your secret sauce. Anyway, yes, you hit on a lot of great things. And actually, there are a couple I want to add because I'm actually going to build off the piece that you talked about in the last question, which was really about getting in and doing those stakeholder interviews. Because I am the same way. I use that as much for me to understand who's going to be in the room. Are they people that are going to be apprehensive about what we're doing? I go in knowing what I'm probably going to experience when I go into that room. And because of that, I make sure that if I do breakouts, I'm making sure I'm choosing who goes where and that, I'll even start to do things like I'll seed and have a moderator for each group already know kind of what they're going to need to be or what they're going to be up against and what they're going to need to draw out. I also take the approach where, I basically start every session with, leave your title at the door, bring your brain and your skills and your passion to the session because this isn't about who says what. This is about everybody coming to the table and expressing what they're thinking, what they're feeling, what their ideas are, and us working through and making sure we get to that, better outcome. I'd say the only other thing is, for me, making sure that the right teams are in the room. And I find a lot of times that I have to push back and say, yep, but sales needs to be in here too. Or, yep, that person who's designing the UX UI is going to bring a huge perspective to this. So I'd say that's kind of the other thing because when you get that rounded out cross-functional team, it is much easier to your point, Jill, have those meaningful, those hard conversations because the right people are in the room at the right time to have them. And then at the same time, you're also bringing the team along by doing that because they're all feeling like they've been heard. And they know that they've been able to come to the table and, have their word taken seriously.
So, what techniques do you have that help you dig deeper into insights to offer a better recommendation?
So this is one of my favorite questions because it really kind of rounds out one of the reasons why it pays to leverage an expert facilitator. They have been in so many different types of situations and done with, dealing with different types of workshops, different types of groups, that they've really taken a lot of time to develop those exercises to really give them this phenomenal toolbox that they can use. There are all kinds of ways to get into deeper insights. And, honestly, really good sessions blend a little bit of creative exercises with some harder core, let's use our brains and use critical thinking, knowing when you need to let people, walk away from what you're doing. So, knowing that you can pivot or you need to pivot in a session because you're not getting into those deeper insights, but you know when to kind of cut the cord and have people go take a break and then come back and address it again. But, to name those, there's so many. There's a lot of things like mapping, visual mapping that I tend to rely on because if you think about the fact that a lot of people's thoughts are either in their head or they're in a document, or even what's happening now where people are putting everything on like a Miro board or a concept board, and it acts more as a housing unit versus using a wall in an innovation space or in a conference room that you're visualizing the problem for people. Because when you visualize the problem, it becomes more obvious to them because they're able to see those outages. It becomes more real, especially if you have cross-functional teams working on it. So like I said, it's kind of, there's always a combination of what are the best exercises that are going to get the best insights and get us to being able to make those better recommendations. And again, like to Jill said, that's part of the crafting the experience. Jill, what else do you have that you've got in your back pocket?
Yeah, so, and I agree with that. I think that there are so many different techniques, so many different ways of getting kind of to those really deep truths or getting to that action that we want to see from the workshops. Some techniques that I really like are those that are rooted in behavioral science. I really love to get on the soapbox and talk about it, but they really are extremely useful during these workshops. And, behavioral science really shifts leaders from talking about change to actually behaving differently, which is
Yes.
really the whole point. So when these techniques are built into the facilitation strategy, it helps the leaders really make better decisions together in the room. And then it also helps the leaders uncover, what's really getting in the way. So these are very deep conversations that are not surfacey that you would typically see. And most importantly, leaders are going to leave with commitments that actually stick. So it's really the difference between a conventional leadership conversation and a discussion where decisions actually change how the organization operates. So, for example, like instead of a discussion that ends with, well, we need to collaborate together, a behavioral science designed type of workshop has the session with leaders saying that, we're committed to making real trade-offs, or they're taking ownership through choice and not because it was assigned to them. So they're committing to that actual, I'm owning this. I know that this is something that I have to do. And not only that, but they're committing out loud to specific decisions and actions. So these are the outcomes that are rarely achieved by internally facilitated workshops because they just don't have the tools to do it. And by actually having those behavior changes happen through that more advanced behavioral science type of collaboration is, again, really getting that commitment that we're looking for out of the leadership to kind of move the needle forward.
And actually, Jill, I want to build on that because you're hitting on something that I've been running into even more so recently, where the behavioral piece, and I come at it from a similar way, where I come at it from design thinking, empathy, rooted in behavior. And I'm seeing more and more instances where that is even more important than anything else with regards to AI adoption. And why companies are not seeing the ROI they expected when they implemented those tools and flipped the switch and said, okay, go. They didn't start with those actual people who needed to use them and address their fears, their cautions, their insecurities. Like, they didn't address any of that to understand what do they need to do to be able to get them to be okay with it, adopt it, learn it, and become a, keep human, but also understand how to leverage those tools to do their job well. So I really like that you added that because I think we're going to see even more of it, I hope, in this next year.
Give me some examples of how you translated insights and data into implementation strategy and results.
Well, and that's really the ultimate goal here. So, and that can happen very differently based on the different types of objectives with the workshops. But, kind of stepping back a bit, as we discussed earlier, internally facilitated workshop sessions end up with observations or follow-ups. Yet the third-party facilitated workshops end up with decisions that leaders can act on right away. And that's really what we want to see. So back to that discussion around the healthcare system that was struggling with patient access. So our session strategically addressed increasing patient wait times, right? And as a result, the leaders were pushed to immediately set clear guardrails around capacity decisions. So again, this was an immediate action item that actually helped to combat those increasing patient wait times. And then also we addressed the conflicting priorities around new service lines. And this led leadership to have to make decisive calls on when growth moves forward and when improving access comes first. So again, it's taking action on making that decision and doing that more immediately. So again, we're preventing for those stalls to happen and knowing that when we make those decisive calls, we know which direction we're all going in and everybody's in agreement. Also, leaders got specific about who owns which access decisions. So cutting down again on those delays and those setbacks. And then finally, each leader committing to one decision that they would handle differently in the next 30 days. And then what was really important is that having that group come back and set a follow-up to evaluate if they actually did commit to those decisions that they would be handling differently. So those are the kind of takeaways that we want to see. Again, making sure that that action is taken and making sure that they're responding in the right way so that they're not having to come back, regroup, and address it again. Ellen, how about you?
So you covered a lot of it. Maybe just a couple other things just to round out a little bit. I'd say one of the things that I do before I go in, and I know Jill, you do the same thing, whereas I get leadership to align to what is the success criteria of the session, but also the long-term goal, because helping them recognize that, to your point, the observations, there might be a lot of insights, a lot of, and I call them ingredients that have come out, and that, like, those are the things we need moving forward. And we need to align that we're not coming out with XYZ. We're not going to go move forward with one, two, and three right away. There still needs to be some translation of what was in that session. So one of the things I make sure is they understand that difference between success criteria for the session and then what's that other piece. The other thing that I tend to do too is after a session, I will have them what I would call cook. I use the whole cooking ingredients like a metaphor. So I have them usually wait a couple of days and then we regroup. And I usually give them a fairly like clear assessment of what I think I was happening in the session. And it might be that sometimes I'm already seeing, in order for you to move to implementation strategy, we actually need to stop and we need to go back and do some other research. Or we might need to stop and go dig into another section again. Sometimes I'll even come to them with, here's what I think you should do based on what I'm hearing. But what you guys, ultimately you need to make that final decision, because at that point, I can actually add in some things that maybe I hear people saying, but haven't been captured strong enough, or might be things that they're not even thinking about yet that I'm already starting to see might be road bumps moving into, like, as they progress into that project.
Thank you again. Any closing thoughts?
I'd say for me, where I've seen the biggest ROI in instances when I've been brought in as an external facilitator have actually been really in two areas. One, where I actually helped them uncover that they were going down a path that they needed to actually not be going down because they didn't have the right resources, technology, strategy, which ultimately, might seem bad, but if you're working in a billion-dollar company, that's actually a good thing because you stop spending resources against something that has no right to win in market or with, or with your internal people either. I'd say the other one is there's so much more value when you can make sure that that external facilitator is ensuring that you are going to have something at the end that is going to move forward versus what happens a lot of times is it ends up a whole bunch of post-it notes on a wall and it's something that may or may not move forward and may or may not move forward in a productive and effective manner. I'd say those are probably the big two for me. I've actually had an instance where I actually saved the company $1 million because they projected what they were working on from a product development standpoint was actually being designed for the wrong consumer. And they, based on that redirect and, refocus, they projected that they would have lost $1 million by following that direction. So there is actual ROI to sometimes, not just what you should do, but sometimes what you shouldn't be doing.
I agree. And to build on that, I would just say that it's important for organizations to be honest about what they're capable of when it comes to internal facilitation. There are very high aspirations, but do they really know how to get the most out of the workshops? And even more importantly, I think organizations have to be real about the cost of continuing going down the same path that unfortunately does not lead to change. So I would say for any organizations that are kind of feeling that, if this is resonating with anybody out there, please feel free to contact us. We would be happy to have an initial conversation talking about your challenges and how that third party neutral facilitation could actually be beneficial for your organization.
Please join us for our next insight clip where we talk about how strategy can uncover unknown or untapped revenue streams. Thank you.